How does one go from hobby to making a few sales a month to running your business full-time? This is what we talk about in episode 11 of the Business of Making podcast. Do you want to make it as a maker? This is the Business of Making podcast with your hosts Michaela Denvers, Deb Engelmeyer, and Jess Van Den.
We know from experience that growing a handmade business is bloody hard work. We're here to make it a little bit easier for you by dishing out reality-based, no BS, tried and tested advice on how to make your business work.
Tune in every week for an honest conversation on what it really takes to make a creative business a success.
Hey Maker, are you loving the Business of Making podcast? We're loving bringing it to you, but we really need your support to make sure that this show keeps going into the future. You can support us by becoming one of our patrons on Patreon for as little as a dollar a month. We have a few different membership levels. You can get things like behind the scenes and extra special content, a link to your business from our website, and even maybe a shout out on the show and more. Just head on over to thebusinessofmaking.com/support and you can get all the information there about how you can become one of our Maker Movement's insiders and help this show to grow and flourish going forward.
Hey everyone, Michaela here. Welcome to the Business of Making show. Today I'm here with Deb.
Hello.
And Jess.
G'day all.
And in this episode, we're going to be talking about how to transition to working for yourself full time.
So,
how are we going to start this, ladies? Who wants to go first?
Well, I think if we just share our stories.
I think that's a great idea.
How we did it. So I'll try to keep it short because mine's kind of epic. But okay. Mine was an accident, really. In other words, it wasn't planned, which, you know, I guess probably happens to a lot of people. But what happened was I was working full time. I had a great job that had a lot of spare time. So my hours were 1 p.m. to 8 p.m. And so I had, you know, all the morning and stuff free. And that's when I worked on my business. And it was really great. And if you've listened to our very first episode, I kind of talk a little bit more about what happened. So if you haven't listened, go listen to that. But long story short, my job was going to disappear because my boss was going to sell the franchise that I was, it was a tuition franchise, and he offered it to me and I didn't want to buy it. So I decided to finish work at the end of the school year and had a brand new shiny husband.
Is he not new shiny anymore?
Oh, he's still pretty shiny. Any Firefly people, you get what I mean. All right, so shiny, awesome new husband. He didn't have a job because he was British and we just got married, so the whole visa shenanigans, he wasn't allowed to work yet. So we thought, hey, this is a great opportunity to do some traveling before we settle down again. And the plan was to go around to Australia in a camper van and over the summer. So for those of you listening outside of Australia, the school year finishes in December, so it's and summertime. And we converted the van to a camper van and we were going to go on the trip. But I had some health issues that stopped us from leaving for ages and ages and ages. And it was so frustrating. But in retrospect, it was awesome because that's where really this all started because I had nothing to do. We'd finished the van fit out. Neither of us had jobs. I was like, okay, well, I might as well, because I'd closed Ethereal down during this time because it was just a hobby business and we figured, hey, we'd be traveling. I didn't want to work. And I just thought, hey, why don't I reopen the shop and just try to literally just try to sell off stock I already had. That was my plan. And then because I had nothing else to do, I literally threw myself into working on it like full time every single day. And it sort of started to grow and snowball and started to get sales. And I started to get really into it, like learning all the more about the business stuff and blogging more. And I basically turned my blog into like a daily, this was when blogs were like a huge thing, a daily sort of lifestyle, you know, businessy information, whole different things. And by the time it was like September, by the time all my dental shenanigans were sorted, the business had really grown. Like, you know, we were getting a sale or two a day and I was getting a lot of traction with the blog. And, you know, we had obviously, okay, so one, we were living with my parents at the time, so we didn't have rent to pay. We paid our half of the bills and all that jazz. Two, we had a lot of savings So this is what allowed us to be able to do this. You know, we obviously weren't going to go for a trip around Australia having no money. So we had some savings. And by the time we got to this point, you know, we sat down and we're talking about it. It's like, well, let's just see where this goes. Let's keep going with this business. Let's keep working on it. And back then it was pretty much just me, you know, I think Nick by that stage was maybe doing I might have given him the bookkeeping by that stage, potentially. I think that was the first thing I foisted off onto him.
Fair enough.
Yeah, yeah.
What do I not like doing? Oh, this thing there. You can do that.
Yeah. Here's a little discreet job I can give to you and you can do, and I don't have to do it anymore. Hooray.
Do it.
Yeah.
The beauty of like, outsourcing.
Yeah, he's like, you just can't give me all the craft jobs. And I'm like, oh, well, you know. Nowadays, he does like a lot of the baking, so he has some good jobs. But he was doing all the other life stuff. You know, he was doing the shopping and the cooking and the cleaning and, you know, keeping me alive, basically, was his job. You know, that, again.
That is important.
Yeah, it is important. But, you know, if people look back at me and go, how did this happen, you know, I was working full time on my business at this stage. I had a partner who was, taking care of all that sort of stuff. So I was really lucky. We don't have kids, you know, so I had a lot of time and a lot of to work on it. And for us, thankfully, the way the business picked up, you know, it just ended up that we didn't have to ever get jobs again. Like that was it. We've been self-employed ever since. Ethereal just kept growing. And, you know, we had a very small rental income that, from England, because he owned a house over there. It wasn't anywhere near enough to live on, but it was enough to kind of prop things up a little bit and keep us from having to go out and get a job, or him having to go out and get a job so he could support me and I could keep growing the business. So it was an accident, and we had a lot of support. You know, I had a lot of support from him, a lot of support from obviously my family and my parents, who didn't quite get it at first. Like, let's be honest, that can be a real barrier to people, because the people around you not understanding. Like, my mum was always super supportive, but my dad was very much like, you know, how can you really make money from selling jewelry on the internet? Like, you had a good job, you had a good career. Is this really going to work? And now he's like one of my biggest fans, because, you know, I mean, he trusted me. He has faith in me to figure stuff out. And my parents have always, you know, brought me up to be very self-sufficient and to do my own thing. But, you know, it's a really good feeling when your business gets to the point where you can say to people, hey, look how much money I'm making. I can live off this. I remember a few Christmases later, maybe one or two Christmases later, one of my cousins was asking me, oh, you know, how's the business going? You can tell people are still a bit skeptical, right?
How's your
little
hobby?
Yeah, right. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, we made blah, blah, blah amount this year. And look on his face, it's like, oh, okay.
It's
like,
a real thing.
Yeah. It's not just this little hobby business on the side. You're making actual proper money. So that's good. So, yeah, for me, it was
not a slow transition. I think your situation is really like what people expect that they will be able to do, but not realizing that they need all that support and perhaps that stuff. So they're like, oh, I'm just going to quit my job, cold turkey, and then go full time the next week. And then,
no,
like, yeah, it's not. I mean, obviously, it's really great to hear a story like that where it has worked. But the fact that you say, yeah, you did have all that support and savings and that space, like you had the space to be able to do that. But I guess it's important for people to like know it, not like a switch straight away, usually.
Yeah. And I'd been running my business as a hobby for like a year a couple of months.
Yeah, so like,
I hadn't just started.
Yeah.
I'd been spending hours, you know, every single week. I'd already built up, a sales history. I'd built up a history of reviews on Etsy. I'd built up a community of people already around my blog and around my social media. So I was not starting from scratch.
Yeah,
you know, sure, yeah. I'd shut things down for a period of time, but it was all there waiting
all that
for me.
Stuff. Yeah.
So, and that was while working a full-time job. So I'm a huge proponent of slow and steady. Build, you know, work on the side, build all that stuff up. And you'll know when it's time to make the transition. You should have like 6 months of living expenses saved in a bank account.
Mm.
That's a good figure, actually, because it's, I like to have this really practical look at it and go, okay, I've got 6 months saved up. I'm probably good to go. And then if it really doesn't work out, then I've got enough time to make another plan and maybe go back to work or get another job and, you know, some sort of transition. But yeah, it's, my story is very different and I'm trying to like piece it together. And I feel like I've done so many different things in different order. I'm like, oh my God, I should have done a timeline before we recorded that. What did I do? But I was in corporate back in France. And then when I got to Australia, it just wasn't that easy because visa, as you said, like it just, you know, I really could, I mean, I could work for a big company, but for me to get a residency and a long-term contract, I had to sort of justify that I was better than any other Australian to do the job for them to give me like a sponsorship and blah, blah, blah. And like, let's be honest, there's other people in Australia that can do marketing. Like, you know, I'm good, but it's not, you know, it wasn't like one of those skill sector where, you know, you're like, well, I have a very specific set of skills and blah, blah, blah. And also I really wasn't into, like, my heart just wasn't into it. I think I probably sent like 4 resumes and like, reply to like 2 emails and the question was like, well, do you have a residency? And I was like, nope, you know, like not trying very hard to go, but I'm awesome. You know? I was just not into it. I was just sort of, I've given up on that. So I was really starting to pick up freelancing work on the side to make money, mostly marketing still. I wasn't doing so much design back then. And then because same thing, visa, I mean, it's so complicated to stay in Australia. Like I've made it, but it was quite expensive and it was quite a process. So I had to go back to studying as well. And I had to pay for that. It was like 10 grand for 6 months. It was like, it was ridiculous. While still paying my school back home, you know, that I finished, but I was still paying off. So at that stage, I'm just like, I need to make more money. So I was freelancing plus doing small jobs. So I did anything from retail, barista, you know, bartender, waitress, I've done it all. And most of the time I was doing all at the same time. Like I was working so many jobs. It was just ridiculous. I don't know how I enjoyed living in Australia because I was really just working. And I'm like thinking back, I'm like, when was I actually enjoying like walks and things and actually loving the country? But yeah, and then eventually Nick and I moved out of Sydney and I got to a point where I teased the blog and all that was starting to pick up and I really wanted to focus on that and I wanted to move away from freelance to doing courses instead and just teaching people. And the option was give up on the part-time sort of bartender, waitress, barista job and focus just on freelance for the money while I grow it, or give up on freelance and do a bit of barista thing. And I did that for a while and that people just did not understand because it didn't make sense. It was like, why would you stop work with your client, which paid much better money? And I was like, because it's so hard on my brain, like spending, you know, all that actual intellectual work, working with clients and then having to work on my own stuff on the side. I just don't have the energy for it anymore. Whereas I actually went back to just a regular job. And I don't like to say that because it sounds simple and like, you know, like it's a dumb job and not at all. Like it's draining too, working with, you know, in like hospitality and retail and all of that. But I did it for a few months when we moved down south and I was able to quit pretty quickly after that. So that was good. But I was able to quit simply because I had the space and the, you know, in my mind and in my brain to actually focus on my work instead of just doing freelance. So yeah, I'm the same. Like, you know, my parents were freaking out a bit. Like, not really, because you know, they, you know, you get to an age where they can't really make decisions for you anymore. But yeah. I could sense, what is she doing? Like, first she's like in this foreign country, and apparently she wants to live there now, and she's been there for 5 years, so I think she's not coming back. And she's given up on corporate where, you know, like she's paid this business degree and she's not really using it. And now she's not even doing the freelance thing. That was working well. What is wrong with her? She just wants to make coffee and got this blog that she's trying to grow. Like, I'm sure they were like a bit worried and trying to support you. But also, like you said, it's like, how is your little thing going? And I do remember the Christmas after that going, well, you know, I've made that much money off it and it's like working well, and people are going, oh, crap, that's more than what I've made at my job. And I'm like, I know, it's like, stop calling it a little hobby. You know, it's a thing now, let's officialize it. But yeah, there was definitely that transitioning that was like part financial. And I was also able to stop working freelance because Nick's picked up work as a teacher back then, so we had that sort of like safety net financially, and we don't have a mortgage or anything like that, so we don't spend much. So that, you know, we just did pretty much the spreadsheet and went, okay, how much do we need? How much are you making? And how much do I have to make? So I'm able to like just quit everything and just focus on that one thing. But it was definitely a few steps, and there's definitely no cold turkey and going like, I'm doing it and I've got only 19 days to make it happen, because that is stupid, people.
It's a bad plan.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, especially for most, you know, if you're listening to this and you're young and you're free, you know, you don't have a mortgage or kids or a wife or a husband or, you know, any big financial responsibilities, then maybe you can do that. Maybe you can just go, screw it, I'm just going to start this thing and I'm going to throw everything into it because I'm, you know, living at my parents' house or, you know, whatever it might be, you've got the freedom to do that. But a lot of you listening are not in that situation. You do have those financial responsibilities. Now, that's not to say you can't maybe change your life and change your lifestyle to reduce those responsibilities. I'm not suggesting, like, you know, divorcing or leaving kids behind, but I'm more talking about lifestyle. You know, maybe are you living in the middle of Sydney? Yeah, like the most, isn't it like the high, most expensive place?
Oh, yeah, that too. Yeah, that was definitely helpful when we moved out of Sydney. Yeah. I was like, oh my God, look at how much space we've got. What we had in Sydney. Sydney was ridiculous. Yeah, it was, we were just stuck there for work and studies. And
yes.
He was finishing his diploma to become a teacher as well. So yeah, but definitely lifestyle choices, people. Maybe you don't need Netflix and, you know, Spotify and all that.
Yeah, I mean, look at those things. Look, where can you save money?
Yeah, and sometimes it's really hard. Like my, I've had a cleaner since my first son was born. So actually, a bit before he was born, and he's about to turn 7. So, I had this beautiful woman come like every fortnight and I got really used to that. And then we ended up having another woman come and she was coming weekly. And then just recently we were like, this is like $400 a month that we're just spending where the house is clean for a day. And then it's not clean anymore until the next time she comes. So it was really difficult for me. I'm like, no, you know, I'm outsourcing and this is the thing that I would otherwise have to do and I'm saving my time, blah, 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 blah. But in the end, I just had to be sensible and go, well, you know what? It's not actually value for money at the moment and that's something I need to cut. And it's like, oh, now I have this extra cash that I can just go to the movies if I want to. But yeah, sometimes it's hard to, like, because you're holding on to those things that you love and, you know, like Netflix and stuff as well, it's the same sort of thing. Like if you're getting a lot of value out of it, then maybe it's worth it. But really looking at where you can save to give yourself that financial space to be able to grow your business because it is expensive to start a business. It's not cheap.
Yeah, it is. It is. And yeah, even like crazy things like, can you move? Can you move somewhere cheaper? Especially it, you know, it obviously depends on your partner's job and whatever, if you're in a relationship, but like put that stuff on the table. Mm. Like if you're serious about making this a business, a full-time business, you've got to think long-term. You've got to think of those big things. And if you are with someone, you need to talk about it together and make those decisions together because you can't just, you know, go off and make your own financial decisions. But, you know, having a plan, and I'm sure we'll talk about this in another episode, you know, actually laying out how it's going to happen, I think goes a long way to convincing those people in your life that you are serious about it and you kind of, you do have a good plan and you can give examples of people who have done this successfully. So all of those things are good too. But we haven't heard Mick's story yet.
My story is one of very much going backwards and forwards. And it, my leaving of the workforce was very much planned. When I had my son, again, he's 7. So 7 years ago when I went on maternity leave, I came back from maternity leave. I was doing teaching and I came back at 0.5. So I was working like 2.5 days a week. I gradually went up to, I think I went up to 0.6 and then 0.8, but I was always only ever part-time after having my son. And he was in care. So he was either in daycare or at my parents' house. I think I might have had him one day a week. I can't really remember. It's a long time ago. but I was always doing my freelance stuff on the side. I mean, I've been doing my freelance graphic design work in one form or another, or photography or whatever it might be, since graduating uni. So always been working in some capacity for myself, but then did the teaching, always part-time, and then it sort of came to a head where I was like, I don't want to be here anymore. I want to leave. So I planned for a year and worked out, well, I thought I'd worked out all my money stuff and how it was all going to work. And so then I took leave without pay. I still wanted that little safety net. I wanted to be able to go back if I had to. And because of having kids, I could take parental leave. So that worked well. And I dove headfirst into the full-time awesomeness that is working for yourself, but I also, I hadn't worked out the money stuff really well at all. And with a, you know, taking on a lease. So I kind of didn't just leave and then work from home, which is a little bit lower risk. You know, if you're not having income, but you can work out where your income's coming from, if you don't have massive expenses, then it's kind of low risk. But I went the high risk option where you have massive expenses. I was just doing my income and expenses the other day and looked at my 2015 spreadsheet, and it was horrendous. My expenses were like $5,000 a month. And
oh my gosh, it's terrifying.
Insane. And but I was bringing in seven-ish a month, so it wasn't, well, some months I was bringing in four. So yeah, it wasn't great. So if anyone is thinking of transitioning to that sort of work full time, I would do like an accounting course first, you know, something to prepare yourself for that sort of high risk, like level of monetary financial stuff. It's just like, it was a big learning curve. So after that, when I decided to close down, I didn't go back to teaching though. It's just not going to happen. And eventually I did actually quit from the Department of Education. So now I can't go back. I want to go through the whole process of applying again. But yeah, so I have also steadily kind of worked at the university here on and off as a sessional teacher, and that has supplemented the income. So yeah, it's kind of going backwards and forwards, and just knowing when I do need to have that supplementary income. So when I've changed tact, or if I've, you know, pivoted and I know that I'm not getting any like workshop income in anymore, then while I'm building up my other services, I know that I need some sort of employment. Like I can't just be a drain on my family and rely on my husband to bring in all of the income, because while I'm still also like trying to work and but working for nothing at the moment, like while you're building. So I always knew that I would have to supplement that income with traditional employment, but the university employment is so flexible that it really suits me. But I think it's really important to know that it's totally okay to have a job. So maybe you're working like 9 to 5 in an office job that you hate. See if you can like change that into a part-time or a job share, or quit completely but get a barista job, as Deb said. Like it's, you know, it can come in any form, and there's no shame in having some sort of supplemental income while you're still building your business. So fast forward to today. I'm doing the uni stuff, and I would like to be focusing on my business completely full-time, but it's kind of this funny draw of they actually really want me at the uni. So they're sort of wanting me to do a bit more there. And it's my challenge now is finding that balance of, you know, how much of my business do I want to be doing versus how much of the uni stuff do I want to be doing? And also, of course, the money is very good from the uni. So that's a good pull as well. It's this continuous backwards and forwards, but that's cool. That's where I'm at. I like it. It's good.
I like what you said about the accounting course, and like, when you want to go full time, like you have know exactly what's going on with your numbers. Important. And there's also a big mistake that I see people make, and I have done that mistake myself before, is going, oh, if I make that much money with my business, like that's so, and comparing that to like a wage. And then it's like, oh, wait a second, that's like an income revenue, and then I'm going to get taxed, and then I need to like reinvest in my business.
I just never factored in expenses at all. I'm like, oh, I'm going to be able to make $7,000 a month. This is amazing. Like that's a huge amount. It's like, oh, no, actually not really. Like,
no, it all adds up. Even when you work at home, like I do, you know, you've still got, it's all the little things as well. Like paying for my mailing list software, paying for my accounting software, like all of that stuff is subscriptions. So every single month you've got all of these subscriptions that come out of your expenses. And it, of course, it's a lot lower than if you have a brick and mortar place, because that's just the amount of things there, the insurance, the electricity, like, that's a huge thing, as Mick knows very well. But yeah, the expenses, working out your expenses is really, really important. You really need to have a clear idea of what your expenses are going to be. Your materials, you know, how much are you going to buy? How many bits of silver do I need to buy? You know, how much do I need to spend on my materials every month?
And it's not enough to just have it in your head, because that's what I've been doing. for years. I've been like, yeah, I know that this is what my mailing list costs, and I know this and that and the other. And then you forget about all the other tiny things, like, oh, my Adobe subscription is also increasing every year. And all those little things, like, not enough to have it in your head. You have to have it on a spreadsheet, all added up, so you know how much per week, per month, per year your expenses are, because then you need to figure out your services, products, whatever it is that you're offering, they need to be more than that, like quite a bit more than that to be able to, you know, be an income. So I think it's so important too, and a lot of people don't actually do this exercise, is working out how many of each thing you need to sell to be able to create the income minus the expenses. Is that going to be enough to live off? And how long is it going to take you to do that? It's not usually going to take 3, 6, 12 months. Like, it probably take a lot longer than that. So yeah, it's just knowing that really concretely, like, it's so, so important.
Yeah. There's also the personal aspect of finances as well, because you've got to start learning about that at the same time, because it's, you know, you're leaving this, I don't know exactly how it works in Australia, because obviously you've never worked corporate in Australia, but, you know, the whole, like, your employer sort of paying for retirements and health funds and all of this stuff, and then suddenly you're responsible for that. And usually what happens is you don't think about it for like 10 years. And you're like, oh, yeah, okay, retirement. How does that work? Like, am I meant to, like, pay myself something? Like, it, you know, look into it. You have to account for all of that as well. And then you're really on, like, you're your own boss. And it's like, it sounds cool, but it's also like that comes with all the stuff that your old boss was doing, and that, you know, I kind of wish sometimes someone was doing for me, because it's just, it's not fun at all. So you got to have like a good grasp on like your personal finances and how that's going to work as well.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And let's talk about the biggest expense, your tax.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Your tax is not coming out of your wage anymore. You have to, every single month, every single week, whatever it is, you have to be putting that money aside in a bank account. And it sucks. My God, it sucks. It's so bad, because you put, you like got 10 grand sitting in this account, and then you pay 8 of it to the tax office. You know, like, it's awful, but it has to be done. So if you're at the stage, where you can, so I'm registered for GST. So I do a BAS. So a business, for those outside of Australia, it's called a business activity statement, which means 4 times a year, I report to the tax office what I'm earning, what my expenses are, and I pay a chunk of my tax 4 times a year. Which, frankly, I really prefer to having to pay it all at once.
Yeah, I do too. But then,
So you pay it 4 times a year, and it's a huge chunk of money, 4 times a year, but it needs to be done, and you need to save that money, because there is nothing worse than getting to tax time and not having the money to pay your tax bill. Because not only is it stressful to not, you know, to be paying, owing the government money, if you don't get it paid then, it's just going to stay there, and then your next tax bill comes. So that is a hugely important thing to have set aside. And also, as Deb said about retirement, like, maybe you want to put money in super, maybe you want to, we actually have a retirement account, and we did this really early. We set up a separate bank account completely away from all of our other accounts, and we automatically transfer money in there every single month.
That's so smart.
And we've been doing that for years and years and years. And we don't look at that money. It doesn't exist. The only thing we did when we bought our house, we took everything out of that and put it to pay off the mortgage. And then we've literally paid back what we took out in the meantime. Really, like, we put as much back as fast as we could to pay up to what it was up to. And then we've gone back to the regular. It's like $200 a month or something. It's not a huge amount of money, but over 30 years, you know, that's going to add up to a nice chunk of money for retirement. And super, honestly, I've been terrible with super. I haven't put much in there in the last 10 years. I've had to pay Nick's, obviously, super at times when he's been officially employed by me. But that's something I want to put more effort into. And the swings and roundabouts with that, like, if you have a job, you don't have a choice. You have the super is non-negotiable. But if you're self-employed, you can go, well, do I want to lock my money away in super, or do I want to have my own investment accounts or my own savings account, so I can do basically self-managed retirement funding without having the rules and the laws around super? So again, that's kind of high level stuff, but it's really important, and you really need to think about it early.
Even if it's not something that you know, like, if you're not sure if you're going to be able to retire at 40 because your business does so well, it's good to at least think about, like, if you do want to retire at 40, you can't get your buddy super out. Like, it doesn't, they won't let you. Your money is stuck there until you're 65 or 67 or whatever.
And it's only going to go higher, I reckon, as we get older.
Probably, yeah.
later until you're about to take it out. So I'm kind of hesitant about that. I'm like, well, I'd kind of rather just have my money where I can get to it.
Yeah. I think so. Two things. Firstly, when you were talking about like having to pay your tax, just a note for those people who are still in employment, this is a good thing that if you're being employed, you can, you know, up your tax rate and then just pay more tax from your employment, and then that can sort of cover your business tax because everything's sort of in together. Of course, check with your accountant first before you do anything. We are not experts. but yeah, so that covers me. I'm really lucky. I just get taxed more through the uni, and then I don't have any bills basically, so tax bills. So that works out well for me. And the second thing on super, if anyone you know, if you're not sure where your super's at, you can obviously like check how much you have now. And then there's a lot of like guides online with the average super like amounts. So you can go on and actually check like where you're at. And I was pleasantly surprised to see that I'm slightly over the average for super at the moment, because I've kind of ignored it for the last ever and just relied on my like employers to do their thing. And luckily that's been enough that it's put me over the average at the moment. But another point is that the male average is like way, 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 way higher. Like my husband's super at the moment is more than the average 65-year-old woman's super, which is super depressing for us ladies. But it's also, I think people get caught in the trap too, if you are a female or even if you're male, like relying on that to be your super. It's like, oh, well, yeah, I'm going to be with my husband forever and I'll just get his super then. That's not a good plan. Like you need to have your own nest that you are like taking care of, because you just never know what's going to happen. You just don't know the future. So yeah, you got to make sure that you're looking after yourself as well.
Another one on that with super, and I don't know how this works in other countries, but in Australia, if you are married, your partner, if they're working and you're not, can actually pay into your super account. There's some, I'm not sure of the details. I just heard of this from somebody recently, that you can set it up so that they're actually contributing to your super. So if you are, for example, a mum, you've had a baby, you're staying at home, or a dad, stay at home dad, whatever, whoever's gone back to work can actually put some of this, I think it's like putting some of their super into your super. I'm not sure about the details, but look into that, because that is exactly what Mick's saying. You keep it contributing to both people's accounts instead of just contributing to one.
Yeah, that's a really good point. We could do a whole episode on this, I feel.
Just putting the disclaimer, we are not financial advisors.
Yeah, but I mean, it's good to be aware of this stuff, I think. And we're probably going a little bit off topic now, but I think it's good to cover it.
No, but you know, I think people listening to that and going, what are they talking about? Then you're maybe not ready to.
Yeah,
exactly. And you know, we're not saying you need to have like a very clear, like 25-year plan when you leave your job, but you know, consider all these things, because you're going to have to manage them. And then, as you say, like paying your tax and the quarterly thing, if you apply for GST, this is not your money. Like you are taking the money that you really just holding for the government and just have to pass on. So I know I don't know why tax, I've always sort of been okay with that. I put money aside in a bank account. I don't look at it until the end of the year. And then hopefully that covers it. usually it does. But GST, I didn't have a system in place for a while, and I was like, actually, that money is just going into my like revenue, like you know, and then I'm just using it. And then when you do your best, you're like, oh crap, I need to actually like pay the government this money, and it's different from tax. It's kind of the same thing, but it's different. Mm-hmm. So you know, just make sure that you have a system in place when you do your accounting and your bookkeeping, so that this doesn't happen, because it creeps up on you, and it's just not fun. You don't want to be having to deal with that at the end of the year when it's like financial tax time and. It's a nightmare for everyone.
yeah, definitely.
So, if this sounds super overwhelming for some of you, I'm sure it does, we've actually put together a download for you at thebusinessofmaking.com/full-time. And that is a checklist just to make sure that you kind of know all these areas that you do have to think about if you are thinking about going full-time. So that should be super valuable for you, and you can go check it out now.
Yeah, something I wish I had when I considered.
Would have been helpful.
Yeah, same. Oh, my God. Yeah, because you just don't, like, you're so caught up. I mean, God, we all know there's so many things to think about when you're starting a business, growing a business. You know, guys, like, there's just so many aspects that you have to pull together, and all of this stuff is just on top of that, and it can be super, super overwhelming, and it can also be easy to ignore, because it's not like knocking on the door like, hey, you have to sort me out right now. It's like, oh, I can get to that later. And then suddenly, oh my God, it's tax time. Holy crap. I remember my first tax time, and I had to literally print out a year's worth of PayPal transactions.
Oh gosh, yeah, I've done that.
Oh my gosh.
Because I didn't keep track of like what was in USD, what was in AUD, convert things, and oh my lord, don't do what I did. Don't do that.
Don't do that, Donnie.
Keep track of it,
Ellie. My goodness.
I was importing all of my transactions like a good girl in my bookkeeping software for a couple of months. And realized it was the wrong currency being like grabbed. And I thought it was like automatically, you know, automated. I don't know. I was just like, this is going to work. It did not. And as I'm looking into it, I'm like, the numbers don't stack up. There's something off. Like, I swear this is not the amount I've made. Why is it showing up this way? And yeah, it was pretty bad. So definitely, like, if you work with different currencies, like, definitely look into that. One last thing I wanted to say before we probably wrap this up is, you know, take the time to give yourself time so that you have, you can fail and experiment. And I don't mean that as in, you know, it's going to be hard and you're going to fail. But I see so many people online, you know, or see all those stories of, you know, I've given myself the summer or 3 months and that's just not enough time to do things properly at times and to experiment. Yeah. And, you know, we've done this episode on experimenting with your marketing and all of that as well. So I'm not going to dive into it again, but you have to take time to do things properly, try things, see what works, see what doesn't. And really just dropping to a part-time job from your full-time allows you to do that. Mm. Quitting your job and getting a more, again, I'm going to say simple with air quote, you know, simple job allows you to do that as well. So find something that gives you that time to just really make mistakes if you need to and do things properly rather than rush and do something that you think is good enough, but that's really not going to be good enough. And then you're in a position where you've got no savings anymore and you've got to go back to full-time employment and the whole thing is just back to absolute zero. So yeah, take your time.
Definitely take your time. Take your time, do that work. I mean, there's nothing wrong with keeping that side job. I know my friend Cass from My Bearded Pigeon, who is a very successful business, she kept her other job like 3 days a week because she's a social worker and she loves it. She doesn't want to give it. She didn't want to give it up. So she kept it deliberately. Mixed just showing me her My Bearded Pigeon things that she's got.
So good.
So shout out to Kath. So yeah, I mean, that's cool too. Like it doesn't have to be one or the other. It can be both. You just have to make the time. And, you know, she outsourced parts of her business so she could keep that job that she loved. So, yeah, there's lots of ways of doing it and there's no way that's better than others.
That's right.
As long as it works for you and it makes you happy, that's what it's about.
Yeah. And just on Deb's point of taking your time, I think a lot of people in my audience are thinking about, you know, starting their business while they're on maternity leave. So they get pregnant, they're like, I don't want to go back to work. So this is the time to do it. And I guess my advice around that is, sure, that could work, but if you only have 9 or 10 months of maternity leave, think of it as a time to test the waters, to do all your testing. Think about your product and your customer, work out, you know, if that is even a possibility. That's the time to do that. And then it'll be time to grow from there. You're not going to be able to start a full-time business in those 10 months if you're starting from scratch. It's just with a baby, with a newborn at home.
Yeah, like, I was going to say,
what? You've got a new human to take care of.
Exactly. And, you know, there is, if you have a really good sleeper, there's a lot of time. Like, it's a great time to do it. But you just don't know what your baby's going to be like. So there's so much pressure that people put on themselves to make a full-time business in that very short time period. And it's just not good for your mental health. It's not good for the business. It's not good for the baby. It's not good for like just hanging out and having a fun time. So yeah, just really, really like take your time and yeah, use it to test the waters rather than launch straight into this full on thing. So to wrap up, I think our basic, you know, message that we want to give to you all is this is totally a doable thing, but maybe just adjust your timelines of what you're sort of thinking. Don't rush into things. Make sure that you've done a lot of research and sort of know what you're getting yourself into. And yeah, basically, if you guys found this episode helpful or you enjoyed it, please share with your friends. If you want to take a screenshot on your phone and you can share it to IG stories and tag us, that would be awesome. You can also subscribe and we would love you for that because that would be amazing. And if you want to leave us a review, that would be awesome too. Thank you so much for listening, guys. And we'll be back again soon with another episode of The Business of Making. We'll catch you later. Bye.
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 Oh, Lord.
I suck. I need notes. And then I don't know what to say after that.
Just